Coach your best to me means extracting the most out of yourself, looking inside yourself, doing everything you can to provide the best possible service to another person in their pursuit of their dream. So I think as a coach, our job is to make the dreams of young men and women come true. That's what Coach Your Best means to me.
In this episode of Coaches You Should Know, I've got my buddy David Joyce joining us. We're talking about his recent book, Sports Injury Prevention and Rehabilitation. We're talking about injury risk profiling. We're talking about screening, specific warning indexes, plus a whole lot more. Let's go. Hey, I'm Jeremy Boone, and welcome to the Coach Your Best podcast. If you're a first-time listener, great to have you. And if you're a regular, it's even better to have you back. And you can find me on the web at athletebydesign.com. And if you're on social media, let's be sure and connect. My user handle is at athletebydesign. And as we release this episode, we're basically now officially starting fall sports. At least here in Charlotte, North Carolina, fall sports have already started. Preseason for pro sports started about a week and a half ago. And hopefully you had a wonderful and super busy spring and summer getting to prepare athletes for their fall season. I know for me, this is probably the busiest spring and summer of getting to train and coach elite athletes that I've probably had in the past 10 years. And I'm certainly going on into the Olympics and a lot of great storylines there. So, in fact, I'm looking forward to share some of my own stories and experiences, what worked and probably more so what didn't work in the opportunity to train some of those athletes in the future episodes going into the fall for the Coach Your Best podcast. As we head into this episode, just really excited to have my buddy David Joyce back on the show. If you missed our first series, we dove into his first book, High Performance Training for Sports. In fact, I'll be sure and put a link in the show notes. Don't miss it. Fantastic episode series. And so in today's show, David and I are getting into a few of the chapters of his recent book, Sports Injury Prevention and Rehabilitation. Without hesitation, here's David Joyce. Okay, I'd like to welcome back to the Coach Your Best podcast. Definitely no stranger. This is a guy that I personally am hoping sooner than later, man. I just get to have some face-to-face time with you, David Joyce. David, how are you, brother?
G'day, Coach. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. It's a Saturday my time, which means it's a Sunday your time. What's going on Sunday in your world?
Yeah, it's bright and early Sunday morning here. It's about 7:30. The sun's just starting to peek over the horizon. The birds are starting to chirp, and it's Derby Day here. So it's the team I work with are the Giants, and we play the Swans today in a massive sold-out derby at Sydney Olympic Park. So just having a pretty decompressed start to the morning before we start to ramp up for a 4:40 kickoff.
Love it. Well, you know, one of my most recent guests, I think, is a good friend of yours. At least he claimed he was, Sam Robertson. And I don't know if you got a chance to hear our conversation, but he gave us a little insight on you now, David, that you're a guy who likes a nice bottle of red wine, brother.
Yeah. Well, he tells the truth. He tells the truth.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun to talk with. Well, so we had you on a couple of years ago, David, talking about your first book, High Performance for Sports. Obviously, big success. It's helped a ton of coaches. This past December, I believe, is when you had your second book that you and Daniel edited, titled Sports Injury Prevention and Rehabilitation. And I want to take just a few quick minutes and talk about that. Walk us through what were the two or three biggest things that you walked away with from that experience of co-writing and editing that book?
The interesting thing about this one is that whilst it came out last, or the most recent one, it was the process or the project that was started the first. So Dan and I first came up with this concept, it must have been about 5 years ago now, because we were frustrated by the fact that sports science and strength and conditioning books really didn't cover pathology at all, and that sports injuries books didn't cover performance and like high-end return to competition phases well at all. So there's this huge area that you and I would recognise as being high performance that actually wasn't discussed at all. So with our background sort of being a coalition of both of those areas, we decided to try and correct that gap in the market. So essentially that was the concept behind it. And then we spoke to a couple of publishers, one of which was Routledge, and we ended up by going with them for this book. And then at the time, Human Kinetics said, "Oh, listen, we're really disappointed you didn't choose us. Can you write a book for us?" And that's when High Performance Training for Sports came into fruition. So that was kind of the genesis behind it. But the high performance sort of got a bit of a life of its own and really accelerated towards the publication date. So the actual things that we took from High Performance and applied it to sports injury prevention was the real need to be very clear about the practical implementation of our ideas. So it is not just about, you know, a lit review about the best way to rehab an ankle or you know, this is what the researchers say at X university about, you know, the 5-degree lack of internal rotation in a shoulder or anything. Series of masterclasses about how to get the best practical implementation of these concepts into your environment.
You know, one of the things I appreciated, David, you guys divide this, we'll call it a book, I mean, it's quite thick actually, into six parts. You know, part one being the performance team, part two, athletic competencies, part three, the injury process and prevention, part four, managing the injured athlete, part five, managing the training athlete, part six, special considerations. And, you know, for you personally, was there a favorite chapter that really spoke most to you for what you do every single day?
I think you might have asked me this question about high performance, Jeremy, and I think it's like trying to choose between your children. But for me, look, I'm really, really proud of the chapter that I wrote with Dave Butler, the pain and performance one, because I think that is a concept which is really poorly understood in sport. So I think that was really good. The athletic neck chapter with Kay Robinson is really, really, really good. So Kay was the physio with British Skeleton, which won a gold medal in Sochi at the Winter Olympics. Now, for those of your listeners that don't know what skeleton is that mad sport where they basically are on a tin lid and they go face first down a toboggan ride of ice. And so that they get a lot of neck problems, a lot of concussions and these sorts of things. So Kay brought to life the really interesting ways of dealing with G-force and using trampolining as a way of strengthening the neck. So these are the sorts of things that are done in high-performance sport around the world that won't necessarily be accessed by the everyday punter. So that chapter in itself encapsulates everything that we're trying to get out of this particular book of distilling the real high-performance concepts and making them available to every single person.
Well, you know, for this particular show, and I know we don't have long with you, I kind of want to jump into one of your chapters, which is chapter six, the injury risk profiling process. Walk us through.
Go on there, Jeremy. What I should also acknowledge is, you know, the big hitters that you have on your show are also in here, like Nick Winkelman. Yeah. So it's a testament to your show that you're able to get the really great people on here, because Nick Winkelman's been on there. And who else?
Coach Bosch, for sure. Guys.
So, yeah. You know, you and I think about high performance in the same manner because we're speaking to the same people.
Yeah, man. Well, I appreciate that. That definitely means a lot. And, you know, we'll use that as a segue into your chapter six around the injury risk profiling process. Walk us through some of the big ideas in that chapter. I think coaches often, even high performance coaches, David, often just assume that I could go sit here and screen to, you know, prevent injury. And that's not always the case.
Yeah, well, I don't think you can prevent all injuries. The reality of sport is there's an application of forces which does exceed the body's tolerance on some occasions. So you might have an acute broken arm or things of that nature. So that we need to be cognizant of the fact that we can't prevent every single injury. However, there are injuries that I think we can screen better for, and that we, if we implement the right strategies, that we should be able to prevent or at least reduce the risk of these injuries happening. And these are more the ones where there's the accumulation of forces, sub-threshold forces that over time add up to exceed the body's capability. So we're talking about the overuse injuries of groins and hips and shins and these sorts of things. So what we've tried to do with this chapter is provide a fairly simple way of understanding the best way to profile these injuries. Now, a lot of it was born out of the time that I spent observing the work of the UK border agencies. So the UK border agencies, I was living in England at the time, and this is the group of officials that every country has, really. And what they do is they screen the entry process through the borders of the UK. So, you know, a million people all the time coming in, wanting to spend time in England for work, business, pleasure, whatever. How do they screen these people coming in so that they're weeding out the terrorists and the Australians with dodgy work visas and all these sorts of people without having to do a cavity search of every single person? And what they do is they effectively do a risk profiling. And the reason I went to these guys was because I was really dissatisfied with the way we did it in sport. And I'm always a fan of looking at other areas and go, well, what can we learn from this area that's not sport that we can apply to sport? I think we can really open the box in that manner. So they start off with generating what they call a generic warning index. So a generic warning index is basically the injuries that are most likely to happen to that particular population. So if we're talking about let's talk about your sport. Now, I'm going out on a bit of a limb here, Coach, because I'm not going to put my hand up and say that I'm an expert in NASCAR. But let's just use this as an example, and you might be able to help me. The traditional screening method will have a pro forma sheet of every possible joint, every possible muscle, isometric, concentric, eccentric muscle actions, elbow extension with shoulder flexion, elbow extension with shoulder extension, you know, and every possible combination. And when we think about it, when we put all those things together and then we think about all the injuries that could happen, we've got this infinite number of possibilities, which is too large to screen for and certainly not backed by science. Mm. So what we need to do is look at the injuries that are most likely to occur. So if we think about NASCAR, Jeremy, maybe you can talk to us about the four most common injuries that you guys would see.
Yeah, well, for sure. Actually, why don't we it's okay. Let's make it Olympic swimming because we're 15 days out here in the States from the U.S. trials. And here in Charlotte, I have the opportunity to work with Team Elite. And, it's about ready to go for the Olympics here in Rio. And
let's do that. And I'm a bit more familiar with that sport as well. So let's talk about swimming. So the most common injuries that you would see in swimming would be what?
Right now, over the past year leading up to this month, it's been shoulders and knees.
Shoulders and knees. Okay. Mm-hmm. And certainly in my experience, we get some back issues as well. But that brings you to a really nice question. We can talk about swimming as a whole, but then – and you'd probably join me in this thought as well, I reckon, Coach, is that we're more likely to get knee issues in a butterfly
Correct.
Swimmer than we would in a freestyle swimmer. So yes, we actually need to narrow that population down and go, well, what aspect of the sport are we looking at? And if we're talking about rugby, we might look at the position, because the injury profile of a prop is different to the injury profile of an outside back. So we need to sort of drill down a little bit there before we just look at the swimming or rugby as a whole. So let's look at position or specific role in that sport. So if we're talking about butterfly,
yes,
so we might talk about knee, back and shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, we'd also want to look at potentially the differences between males and females, and that may not apply as much in sport, but in swimming, but it may in other sports. And we also may want to look at the difference in populations in terms of level of specialism. So we know that the injury risk profile of an elite swimmer is going to be slightly different to that of a developmental swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't just go to Google and type in injury swimming and expect that that is going to apply to our particular population. So we want to drill down as neatly as we can, and this probably touches on some of the concepts that Nick talked about in his terrific, terrific podcast. I actually think it's the best podcast I've listened to in the last 2 years with yourself about the research methodologies.
So yes.
If we think about that, so we drill down and we go, right, so I've got a group of 24-year-old elite butterfly swimmers. So we can then get a bit of an injury profile of that particular group and go, right, well, based on our statistics and everything that we've seen from the research, our three most likely injuries are going to be lumbar stress fractures, extension-based stress fractures, shoulder internal impingement, and medial knee injuries, as it's spitballing here. Does that kind of fit in with what you would see? Okay. So there's our generic warning index. So immediately we've gone from an infinite number of possibilities from an injury down to three. Okay. Then what we need to do is build a case for the specific warning index. Now, the specific warning index relates to that individual. Now, we know that the biggest risk factor for a particular injury is the same injury in their history. So we know that if you've had an ankle sprain, the most common risk factor or the highest predictive value risk factor is a previous ankle sprain. So let's just say that we don't think that ankle sprains are particularly common in swimming, but this particular athlete has had repetitive ankle sprains in his or her history.
Mm-hmm.
So we go, right, well, we've got our three generic warning index injuries, but this person has an extra layer, which is ankle sprains.
Mm-hmm.
Bang, there's another one.
Yes.
We also know that this particular athlete has had she's a female, she's 24, and has had an ACL reconstruction in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, not a common injury in swimming, but if we've got a coach that does a lot of box jumping because they want to improve their starts, for example, that's something that we would want to assess for, because we know that females are more likely to get ACL injuries than males, and B, she's had a past history of that. So we can see that we've got those three injuries, the back, the knee, the medial knee, and the shoulder internal impingement, and we've added those layers of ankle instability and ACL into there as well. Now, I'm just spitballing this because it's probably an unrealistic profile, but that's kind of the methodology behind it. So we've gone from an infinite number of injuries to the five things which are most likely to occur with this particular athlete in this particular sport at this particular moment.
Yeah.
Then from there, we just add that last little layer of actually having a look at how she moves. And we would do that looking at the things that we're expert in. This is our bread and butter, looking at how they move under a bar in the gym, looking at how their their swimming technique is, and doing this with the coaches. And so you can see we've gone from a spitballing approach to looking at everything that could possibly go wrong to a targeted, specific, individualized approach to the things that are most likely to go wrong for this particular athlete. Now, it's not something we can talk about the philosophy of it, but there's no pro forma for this because every individual is different.
Correct.
Once we can do this, it's a bit of a process, but if you're really committed to getting it right for your individual athletes, you will really highlight the things which you need to highlight, and you won't spend time chasing the red herrings that most rugby performers, not most rugby, most injury performers will tell us to chase.
You know, one of the things I think that jumped out for me, not just in this chapter, but even in this conversation now, David, looking back on the past 2 years for me with this group of Olympic swimmers as they're heading into the trials. It's so funny that you're picking Butterfly because that's one of the swimmers that I get to work with in dry land 2 to 4 days per week, depending on our cycles of the past 2 years. But this process is so critical to get down and work through, because for me, I'd never worked with an elite Olympic swimmer, much less a butterfly, and she is so hypermobile. It is unbelievable. And she's never, ever done anything on land her whole entire life. So to take simple exercise as a skip or a box jump, she'd never done any of that. And right before she came to me, she had two injuries because of a former coach she was working with had kind of pushed a traditional dry land approach, and it just didn't work for her because of some of those pieces. Hypermobile, extreme ranges of motion, never done anything on land her whole entire life, and she happens to be 24 and a half years old. So
absolutely. So in that manner, what you'd be wanting to look at is not just her risk profile in the water, but if her coach is going to get her doing dry land stuff, you'd want to have a look at her risk profile on land, which, as you're describing, is actually quite different.
Yes.
And this is why, you know, you can't have a ready-made sheet to fill in that's going to fit every athlete.
Yes.
So I remember having something similar. I had he was a world record holder in the 1500 meter freestyle, Australian champion, world champion, Olympic champion, had some shoulder issues. So his coach said, okay, well, we still need to keep your heart rate up. I want you to go for a run. Now, this was in my, I'm going to say, second year of working in elite sport. So his coach told him to go for a run. He went for a 5 kilometer run and is, as you're describing with your athlete, he was a very much a water baby, very hypermobile, had basically never touched foot on dry land before.
Right.
And he developed, in 5 kilometres, developed a stress reaction that went into a stress fracture of his tibia. So his risk profile, you would never think about that for a swimmer in the pool. But actually, when you look back on it, you go, oh, man, that is such a red flag for us. We need to screen for this.
Yes, exactly right. And that's actually why I said shoulders and knees, only out of personal experience, because knock on wood, have not had any low back, but a lot of knees, because they like to go out and run, or they thought they wanted to go try and play basketball, and these knees are all of a sudden knee pain everywhere. Let me ask you this to wrap up in this chapter here. How often should a coach screen an athlete?
Well, I think a lot of the things which we put into that screening are not going to change too frequently. So the injuries of highest risk are not going to change greatly over the course of a year or even 2 years. So that stuff can remain stable. You would add in things that predispose the athlete because they've had them in that time. So, you know, say an athlete wobbles their ankle and they've never had that before, that then goes into their specific warning index. So, you know, it gets slightly larger each year as an athlete gets another injury, if indeed they do. But there are things that we screen every single day in our environment. So for us, we get rudimentary wellness data. So I ask for their energy and appetite for training, the players' sleep, the players' pain, if they've got any muscle soreness, and their their motivation, so or their fatigue, sorry. So I look for all of those things. And then from a physical screening perspective, we do a knee to wall. We do a groin squeeze at 0, 60 and 90. We'll only do it at 60 degrees for everyone, but if we've got a guy with hip and groin issues, we'll do that at 0 and 90 as well, because they go into that subset of risk. We'll look at patella tendons for our guys that have had a patella tendon problem. So we'll do some morning hops and some decline squats just to get a bit of a screen there. And we do a slump test as well. And they're all designed because of the injury profile that we have in our sport. So we want to get some good longitudinal measures of where an athlete is stable at. Now, you wouldn't necessarily go to those lengths. We do it. We're in an elite environment where we see our players every single day. But if you're in a different sort of environment, I reckon you want to have at least a bit of an understanding of how an athlete is feeling each time you add load to their system. So that would be every day they train, but you wouldn't necessarily have to do that range of tests. It might just be a really simple, you know, can you touch your toes, or can you, where are you at today with your body? What's your soreness like? I know when I was working with the Chinese diving team, one of their simple screening measures, and you'll laugh at this, Jeremy, was imagine you're lying on your back, and they wanted you to be able to touch your toes behind your head with your knees straight with one leg.
Say that one more time.
Imagine you're lying on your back.
Yeah.
Your legs are out straight. Yeah. Your arms are by your side, and they wanted your toes on one leg to be able to touch the ground behind your head with your knees straight. Okay, so effectively what they're doing there is going, that's a rudimentary screening test. If you can do that, right, well, we don't need to do more flexibility work with you. If you can't do that, come over here and we're going to stretch the bejesus out of you. So that's their form of screening. So it's very context dependent, but you basically I reckon what you want to look at is to go, right, well, what are the most common things that we see on a training basis with our sport? Is there a feature of physical performance that is going to be indicative of whether they're going to be able to sustain that load? So if you're used to getting hip and groin injuries in your sport, you may want to do an adductor squeeze before they go out to train, and then use that as a method of saying, right, well, a player's ready or not ready, or we need to do some work with this guy in preparation for the training.
Fantastic stuff, David, as always, brother. And, you know, you mentioned one of your personal favorite chapters was with you and David Butler, Chapter 17, Pain and Performance. We don't have time to talk about it today, but for the listeners, I just want to read one little chapter, subchapter heading in chapter 17 for his book. Rehabilitation is for the brain and the body. So you got to get the book if you don't have it. We'll include links to where you can order the book. It's Sports Injury Prevention and Rehabilitation. David, I got to tell you, we're still doing the hula hoop test, buddy. 2 years later, we're having fun.
Yeah, it's funny. Someone sent me a video actually, and the test that they were doing was to see how long you could hula hoop for. And for this one particular girl, they stopped the clock once she'd got to the hour mark.
Oh man! Wow, I love it. I love it. Well, you know, it's true though. You know, so we're going on 2.5 years of the show. We had you on early on with that book, and initially in that first year, one of the most common questions and I got through email from coach was about the hula hoop test you talked about. So I just had to bring that up. So
yeah, it's quite dirty science, but we still do it. And I firmly believe that it's a really nice insight. That's a screening test in itself.
Hope you enjoyed my conversation with David. Unfortunately, the very last minute and a half of my conversation got cut off due to a poor internet connection, given that I'm here in the States and he is in Australia. Nonetheless, though, Again, hope we add a lot of value for you, and excited to have David back here in part two on the Coach Your Best podcast.